They are innovators, visionaries, people pushing themselves, moving us all forward. They are architects, artists, teachers, builders, designers, dreamers, and doers. They are change makers at USGBC. Welcome to Changemakers at USGBC. I'm Rakesh Samarasekara. Resiliency, sustainability. These two broad words mean many things to many people. But what do they mean to people who actually have these words in their titles? Gina Bokra is the Chief Sustainability Officer for New York City Department of Buildings, and Nicole Farini is the Chief Resiliency Officer for the City of El Paso. Nicole also received this year's Community Changemaker Volunteer Award. I got an opportunity to sit down with these two remarkable women. We talked about creating change in government, the importance of mentors, and how you can find some, or just one. Nicole, congratulations on your award. You are the Chief Resiliency Officer for the City of El Paso. It's a bold and beautiful title, but what does it mean?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, and I could spend about an hour talking about what resilience is and what the strategies are, but I think at the end of the day, Chief Resilience Officer doesn't cover it. It should be Collaborator in Chief, because really what it's about is breaking down barriers, breaking down silos, bringing people together so that you can take these resiliency strategies, whether it be from the world of economic development, the world of environmentalism, the world of human health and wellness, and marrying them all together. And it's not always an easy task to force those folks to work together. And so the role of the resilience officer is to do that.
Fantastic. Gina, you are the Chief Sustainability Officer for the Department of Buildings in all of New York City. I mean, first off, when I think New York, the first time I went there was just the sky full of buildings. You can barely see the sky. Can you describe what that title means and what you do?
I wear a lot of hats, but my primary role is a regulator. So it's very different from the career that I started out in. The city's primary source of greenhouse gas emissions is our building stock. And so my role is to enforce the energy code, to improve the performance of buildings across the city of New York, and also to take other sustainability ideas and figure out how to work them into our other building codes, in addition to figuring out how to take some of the great legislative ideas that have come into the city of New York and turn them into programs that are implementable and functional. And so I work with all of the professionals and building owners in the city of New York to help them follow all the rules, which is very different from LEED, as a program that, you know, really rewards going above and beyond. I spend my time with the other 95% of the world who's just trying to get to the bottom.
So I'm speaking to two C-suite experts in change, of making sure that their city is with the times. But change is not easy, especially in the government. If there was one thing that would make your job exponentially easier, what would it be?
I don't know if I'd want it to be easier. I mean, I think that part of what makes this job invigorating is that challenge of bringing disparate ideas together, and it is the diversity of those ideas that makes for beautiful change. And so you almost have to see beauty emerge from that conflict, so to speak. So I don't know that I would want it to, but if I could, I think it would be just the authority to lock everybody in a room until they agreed on something and not let them out.
In New York City, we have a volume problem. My job would be easier, I could say, if I had an army of educators to go out and help everybody understand how easy it is to achieve all of these things that they think are really difficult. Right. And that would take us so much farther towards our, you know, overall goal of sustainability. And that goal in New York City now is an 80% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. So we have a long way to go. And our biggest challenge is educating everybody out there who's practicing right now the same way they practiced 10 or 15 years ago. That won't get us where we need to go. So,
Nicole, you're nodding because you...
No, I'm absolutely nodding because prior to being the resilience officer, I was working in that space with architects and engineers and contractors and just trying to get them to understand that sustainability is not something that just happens because you registered a project or it just happens because you want your project to be green. I mean, there's a shift in thinking, and to shift folks' mindsets in that way, I can absolutely see where you're coming from, why it's very, very difficult to do that.
So we know that most governmental change happens at a glacial pace, but there are days, we can talk about the same-sex ruling, where President Obama said, sometimes there are days when slow, steady effort is rewarded with justice that arrives like a thunderbolt. When I think of that issue, Massachusetts was the first state to legalize in 2004, and at the time, that represented only 2% of the entire population, and 11 years later now, it's the law of the land. So how do we take what happened there and apply to what's happening here in our movement? How can we make justice for sustainability arrive like a thunderbolt?
I would say in a word, people, momentum. I mean, take a look at what it has taken to get to the Supreme Court decision. It didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened because of thousands, maybe millions, maybe billions, I don't know, of screaming voices around the world saying, this is the future. And I think that that's why the momentum that we build with USGBC is so important. You know, I think it may seem as though it arrives as a thunderbolt, maybe suddenly, but I don't think it does happen that way. I think it builds over time. It rumbles like a storm. And then one day you realize we did it. I think that's how it happens.
Right.
I wish I could say that it is going to be a thunderbolt, but I think it will be a slow and steady pace, and that a large part of it depends on being able to prove to everybody that this is something that they can achieve without a lot of burden, and that it is a workable solution. And in New York City, we have to have more and more building owners come forward and show the rest of the community that you can do these things with your buildings without breaking the bank and still be profitable, and that they look like the rest of the real estate in New York City. And it's a good selling point for a building that it's not just a luxury for, you know, a certain part of the sector. So it's going to come slowly over time, and that we just have to see more and more owners prove that the solution is feasible.
And I think it's interesting to hear you say that, and I can completely see there are portions of the market like that. I think one of the challenges that we see, particularly across Texas, is this sort of very strong stand for the status quo. And what we've noticed in West Texas is that the market doesn't shift because an owner decides it's the right thing, or even because an owner decides, maybe I can make a little more profit if I do it this way. Things shift with demand. It's all about the supply and demand piece. And if you can shift the demand to say, it's unacceptable if it's not sustainable, I won't buy it if it's not sustainable. So not even just to say it's more attractive, but to say it's unacceptable if it's not sustainable, is I think what we're starting to see rumble. It's the rumbling storm that I'm talking about. And I think that when we see that resonate at that level, we will see owners respond with a sustainable supply. I hope that's what happens. And especially in Texas, wanting to look at it from that people's standpoint, from that what we want, not necessarily a mandate or a ruling or regulation, but almost an incentive to do it, is I think the way we look at it in Texas.
So lots of lessons to be learned for a lot of people. For you two in particular, what's the lesson that's taken you the longest to learn?
So this is a really tough one for me. I think the hardest lesson that I've learned is that this can't happen overnight. And just because it makes sense to me and to my peers and those that are around us, just because it makes sense to us doesn't mean that it makes sense to everyone else. And to try to shift your own vocabulary and talk to folks in their language, in their space, it has been a very, very difficult thing for me to do. So I don't know if it's taken me the longest to learn, because I'm not sure I'm quite learned it yet. But it's definitely the most difficult piece for me.
I think I'd have to echo that, and I think it takes a lot of focus to personally separate from all of it. That it's something that drives you so much, and you always have to step back and give everybody time to just catch up and start to absorb these ideas. And it's very emotionally driven, concept. Sustainability is a lot of different things. I really like the Brundtland Commission definition of sustainability. It's not just about the environment. It's not just about people. It's not just about the economy. It's about all of them. And you have to step back and convince people that it's not about you. It's about everybody and all of society. Mm-hmm. And we have to work together to get there. And sometimes it's difficult to see that somebody has a hard time understanding and grasping this idea when you've accepted it for so long and it seems so simple.
Accepted it as fact.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? No,
yes.
You're absolutely right. And I love that you bring up the, people, planet, and profit piece, because something that really resonated with me when I started studying resilience is the City Resilience Framework is based in four categories. But in essence, it's people, planet, profit. And the fourth one is leadership and strategy. Well, isn't that who we are as USGBC? Mm-hmm. Aren't we those leaders? Aren't we those groundbreakers? Aren't we those folks that get together and strategize about how to speak that language and how to make it resonate? Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that really struck me when I started studying the resilience framework. I said, wait a minute, we've been doing this. We've already started. So I love that you brought that up.
Okay, then what is the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I've ever received, although probably never taken, is not to take myself or some of these things so seriously, so personally, as mm-hmm. I think you said a minute ago. That's really difficult. Those losses or those steps backward that sometimes we have to take, when you put so much into a movement like this, it's difficult not to take that personally or so seriously.
Right.
I would say that mm-hmm. that's been really difficult. But on a much lighter note, I will tell you the best advice I've ever gotten is to have the skinny margarita made by bartender Betty at the Pier Cafe down the road.
Just here?
Just down the road.
Okay.
Yes. So just...
In San Diego.
In San Diego. Yes.
Gina?
I think that has always been good advice from some of my mentors, is don't take these things personally and just, make sure that you give it time to go in the right direction, because it does take time.
You mentioned mentorship. Why is that important?
I think it's easy to get frustrated if you didn't have some of the mentors that I've had around me through U.S. Green Building Council to keep reminding you that there are reasons to be inspired, that all of these things happen little step by little step, and we are still moving towards this bigger goal, even though it happens so slowly and little by little. We got where we are because of things that happened little by little
right.
over time, and so our solution is probably going to unfold in the same way.
And if, for anyone out there, they want a mentor, but they don't have one or some, how would you go about the business of finding a team or one person?
I don't think that it happens that way. You set out to look for a mentor, you may end up with a false idol, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I think that all the mentors that I ever had have happened very organically, almost like you were mentioning. I was just saying a moment ago, one of the reasons I like coming together so much is because often my mentors are my peers. it's not necessarily that boss at your job or that architect that's practiced so many more years than you have. Oftentimes it's just your peers that are in the trenches with you, and they mentor you, so to speak, through the difficult times.
That's great advice. Okay, so we live in a world that defines us by what we do. It's often the first question you're asked, what do you do? When in reality, I really think, you know, we should be more concerned about why. So why do you do what you do?
I thank my parents for instilling a sense of environmentalism in me at a really early age. And what it taught me was we really have a responsibility to leave things a little better than we found them. And I feel like we are not always paying attention to that responsibility, that we have future generations whose lives are going to rely on how we left things. And that's what motivates me every day. It's not an easy job sometimes. And there are, you know, certainly challenges of the slow pace of things happening the way they do. It's the reason why I get up and go into the office every day, is figuring out how do we leave New York City a better city for the, you know, all of the little kids running around, my own included. That's what motivates me.
I would agree. I mean, I think my knee-jerk answer, you know, is my six-year-old. Mm. Not just leaving him with a world that's in better shape than the way I received it, but also allowing him the space to ask the really wonderful, interesting questions, to really start to explore, you know, the big questions, you know, why are we here? Where are we going? You know, and I feel like oftentimes we get so bogged down in the inertia of just trying to make it better that I don't want him to have to ask those same questions that our parents asked. And are we ever going to get past that? I think that's part of it. But I think on a little bit smaller scale, in El Paso, Texas, one of the reasons I get up and do it every day is because I know what a wonderful community we are. I know what potential we have, and I know how long we've been standing on that precipice waiting to reach it, and I'm ready to just shove the whole thing off the edge of the cliff and take our place, you know, shoulder to shoulder with cities like New York. This Resilient Cities Initiative is so inspiring for us because out of 400 cities that applied around the globe, we were selected in the first 30 alongside New York, San Francisco, New Orleans, L.A. Wow. I mean, these are El Paso. And everybody goes, what?
Where is that?
Where is El Paso? What is that? Isn't that weird, you know, town in West Texas? Is that in the United States? But, you know, I think helping my community to realize its own potential is really a motivation for me every single day, even when it's really, really tough.
Mm. Okay. So finish these sentences for me. I believe.
Anything can happen.
I believe we're going to get there.
Sustainability is, this is for Gina.
Sustainability is making an equitable future.
And Nicole, resiliency is?
Resiliency is our capacity, whether it be at an individual, a community, or a global scale, to survive, adapt, and thrive, meaning to grow forward, move beyond, regardless of the challenges that we may face.
And I am proudest of.
Oh,
sorry, I should have said.
That's okay. Yeah. Gosh, that's really tough because I don't think I'm there yet.
Yeah.
I think that I'm very proud of how far we've come. I'm very proud of the work we've done in my community to build sustainability to a point where we understand what it is. We can have the discussion at least. And now we're moving forward under this sort of into the context of resiliency as well. I feel like that's great. I'm very proud of that progress. But the tangible's not there yet. So call me in 10 years.
All right.
I'm proud of where USGBC has gotten with LEED and its influence on what's happening today in the real estate industry in the U.S., all over the world. And I started working on it when nobody knew what it was. And
97.
And there were a handful of building owners out there that are willing to take a risk and test out this rating system. It has come so far because of the efforts of thousands of individuals who have made it into what it is. Obviously, all of the staff at USGBC are so dedicated to this. Just, it's amazing to me how far they've come and what kind of momentum they have built behind it. So it's very exciting to think about where they might be 10 years from now when you have to answer the question.
When I have to answer the question again, right?
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Nicole, Gina. This was a wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed talking to both of you. I hope it was meaningful in some way. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Changemakers at USGBC. We created this show to go beyond the buildings and spotlight ordinary individuals making an extraordinary difference. Now, we want to hear from you. What was your favorite part of today's episode? We'd love to know what you think. Thanks for listening.